Good morning. That was kind of weak, so let's try that again. Good morning. Good morning. All right. My name is Charles Fisher. I'm generally known around here as the coffee guy. If you've ever had a cup of coffee at our United 4 events or at the Metro Stop, you've tasted some of my handiwork there. And so I'm known as the coffee guy, and I'm completely okay with that. Because there's something special about sitting down with somebody and sharing a drink with them, sharing a cup of coffee with them, and just being able to talk to them and encourage them. And so I love that. And so other than brewing coffee, I do have some other things that are in my life. I do more than just brew coffee. So other than brewing coffee, I'm a husband and father, and I have a son named Lucian. I've got a picture of my wife and me and my son Lucian. This is us in Ireland. And that was the last time he had a restful night's sleep because the jet lag messed him up since then. But it was a fun trip. It was great. And so this is my wife, Nicole, and my son Lucian and me. And so We met in Bible college. Right out of high school, I felt the call for ministry, specifically wanted to be involved in a church plant, a new church. And so I went to a school to study being in ministry. And I met my wife there, and we've been married for 12 years now. And we named our son back in 2004. And in 2008, we started waiting for him to arrive. And he didn't arrive until 2014. And so we had a long time of waiting for him, but he is everything to us now. And so we are a family that serves in ministry and tries to figure that out and what that looks like. And today, we're going to talk about what it's like to reimagine church as far as the next generation win. And so much of who I am and where I've been and the choices that I've ended up making and the different churches I've served with and different ministries I've served with came down to two really influential things when I was a kid, okay? So first off is my parents decided that we would be a family that went to church. Even if it was a boring church, we were going to go to church. And so that was the story. It was not that entertaining or that great and didn't really get that involved. So the second thing that happened, so the first thing is my family made this choice. The second thing that happened was that another kid, when I was a kid, invited me to something called Vacation Bible School. And if you're not familiar with this, it's basically free childcare for like a week. So it's great. And so for every night or every day, depending on how the church does it, is broken down into some time where the kids come, they do crafts, they have snack, they learn Bible stories, and it's a great time, a great activity to reach people. And so I was invited to this, and I came home excited about church. And my parents were like, wait a minute. I'm sure there was more involved in their thought process here. But they saw their 10-year-old son, who never wanted to sit still in church, hyperactive and ADD kid, and they're looking at him saying, oh, he wants to go to church. We might want to go to that church. That might be the place for us. If this boy wants to sit still. I got sent home once for pretending like I was a dog in school. I got sent home for it. So this was me. And so here, you know, my parents are like, okay, this kid wants to go to that church. I think we should go. And like I said, there probably was more adult decisions made there, but that was the thing. There was an invite from a kid. And so much of who I am now came from that invite because I was invited to a church who thought of kids differently. It wasn't about just being fun. It wasn't just about people being there for me. It was mostly about this message being clear. And the message was that Jesus was for me and that he loved me. I was now at a church that valued me and taught me that Jesus was for me and that Jesus loved me. This was a game changer. This was new to me. Wait, Jesus loves me. Jesus is for me. Wait a minute. You're looking at me. You're talking to me. You're interacting with me because even though I'm a kid, you do stuff with me and for me, and this blew my mind. This changed everything. And my parents eventually got really involved in that church as well, to the point where my parents were like custodians for cleaning up the church, and we did landscaping with them. This was a big deal because we had a church that taught us that Jesus was for me. It's so important what we hand down to the next generation. Don't ever underestimate the power of what we hand down to the next generation. If you're familiar with the Bible, it's broken up into two parts, the Old Testament, New Testament. In the Old Testament, there's several times throughout the Old Testament where a whole generation goes without knowing about God because nobody passed it on to them. And when nobody passes it on to them, they just don't know and they do whatever they want. And so you have whole generations in the Old Testament of just doing whatever they want. And the callback is no one passed on to the fact that God was for them, that God did things for them. They had whole generations that turned away from God because the generation before them did nothing for them. They didn't set them up to win. And too often in the church, children in church end up getting viewed as somebody we've got to entertain and babysit while the adults go learn about the Bible. And if we're going to reimagine church together and we're going to become a church that focuses on the next generation winning, We got to be a church that moves away from the mindset that kids are just some future part of the church, that when people start dying off, they can start filling seats. We need to move into a mindset where they're part of the church now. They sit with us now. They talk to us now. They interact with us now. We do ministry with them now because they're part of this together. So basically, that's what we're going to talk about today. I could just wrap up there and leave you there. That's what we're going to talk about, is the fact that we need to move away from a mindset of the kids being some distant future part of the church, and they're part of the church now. And if we're going to look at that, I would love for us to look at what Jesus did. Because if we're going to figure out what we're going to do as a church, we got to figure out what Jesus did first. So we're going to look at a moment in Jesus's ministry where he's teaching. And we're going to throw it up here on the screen. And if you have your Bibles and you want to turn there, that's fine too. It's Matthew 19. It's verse 13 through 15. If you grabbed one of our Bibles in the back, it's page 465. It's going to be up here on the screen, but I got to be honest with you. I'm not one to always just read it to you. I want to tell you a story. So it's here so that you can kind of see it behind me, but I want to just tell you this story because it's an awesome story. Really short section in Jesus's ministry. Jesus is speaking to crowds. He's been gathered around, and every time Jesus speaks, one of two things happen. People gather, and then people get mad about it. So every time Jesus gets a crowd going, and we've looked at this in other messages through this series, we've looked at moments where Jesus has gathered a crowd and the people in charge are upset. And so they try to trap him, they try to trick him. And so what we have here is Jesus talking to a crowd, he's interacting with them, lots of people have gathered, and he's speaking to them. And he's Jesus, so everything he says is just amazing. And they're like, yeah, they're into it. It's not like when I speak. It's like when Jesus speaks, people are into it. They're there, they're listening to it. All right, so we have Jesus speaking and they come up and they interrupt him because they want to trap him. And so they ask him a nice, easy question. They say, what do you think about divorce? Because that's an easy question to answer in the middle of a crowd when you're already speaking, you're already working through stuff. Sure, so Jesus pauses, addresses this question, and starts teaching through divorce. And while he's speaking on that, don't miss this, they've interrupted him to speak about divorce. And then what happens is parents start coming in. He's in the middle of talking about divorce and parents start coming in and bringing their kids up to him because they want him to pray over their kids and lay hands on them and send them on their way. Now the disciples, they kind of look at them and they're like, whoa, 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 kids, listen. You don't need to be in here. We're talking about divorce. It's kind of sad. It's kind of scary. You don't need to listen to this. Just go play. Look, there's a tree you can climb. Just go climb a tree. Leave Jesus alone. He's already being interrupted. You don't need to worry about it. And Jesus gets upset about this. He's like, no. Let them come. In the middle of being questioned, in the middle of teaching what he's been questioned about, Jesus stops again to let the kids come in. And this is so important. We can't miss this because what Jesus teaches us is that kids are not an interruption. They're an opportunity. They're an opportunity. It's not just an interruption. Just because a kid walks in doesn't mean it's an interruption. It's a full-on opportunity to minister and to talk to them and interact with them. And Jesus, in the midst of this, stops. Which I don't know why the disciples are surprised. If he stops and lets people ask stupid questions, why wouldn't he stop and bring the kids in? And so the kids come in and he starts talking to the kids. And if you've ever interacted with a kid, you know, see in the Bible, this is such a small paragraph of a story. And I feel like that's a shame because if you've ever talked with a kid once in your entire life, you know this conversation was not quick. If parents are bringing their kids in to talk to Jesus, they're like, hey Jesus, have you seen that there's birds in the sky? Have you seen this? Have you seen that? They're talking about stuff. And Jesus gets down on their level and he brings them in and he talks with them. He interacts with them. He doesn't see them as an interruption. He sees them as a value. He sees them as somebody to talk to, as to bring them in. He talks with them. He prays over them. He lays hands on them. He interacts with them. See, I work at a daycare, all right? And so I see kids all the time. And every Wednesday, we do chapel service. We're a Christian daycare. We do chapel service. And whoever is involved in the chapel service will come outside the chapel and they will sit down on the floor and let the kids high five us as they walk out. Now, if it wasn't for teachers pushing the kids along, this would take a full on hour. Because when you kneel down and you start high fiving the kids, every one of them wants to tell you a story. They want to tell you what happened. They want to tell you what they ate for dinner. They want to tell you what they ate for snack, what they didn't eat for snack. They want to tell you why snack was gross and why dinner was not. It's a whole thing, all right? And so one of them will come up and be like, Pastor, what do you think about my shirt? And I'm like, oh, that's a good shirt. But you can't answer that question in earshot of 10 other kids because now all the other 10 other kids are like, what about my shirt? What about my shoes? Have you seen my shoes? Look at my socks. I'll take my shoe off. No, don't take your shoe off. But I want to show you my sock. I'll take my shoe. No, don't take your shoes off. Just keep going. They're great. I can see through your shoes. Keep moving them. And so you just move them along. This is a long moment in Jesus' ministry. You know it. You know it. And you laugh because you know. You've interacted with them. You've been in line at the grocery store behind a kid who wants to talk to the clerk, and they're just talking about whatever because they just want to chat. And Jesus teaches us it's not an interruption. It's not an interruption. Have the conversation. Value them. Because when you get down there and you start talking to them, the reason they want to pour out anything is because they're finally being listened to. The reason they want to tell you about their shirt is because nobody else has commented about their shirt. The reason they want to show me their socks is because no one else sees them. Look, my socks are cool. Because now somebody's listening to me. And Jesus says, they're not an interruption. They're not an interruption. Jesus takes them and he prays with them, lays hands with them and interacts with them. He gets on their level. He looks them in the eyes, has that conversation. And here's the key. He sends them off better. When he sends people away, they're always better. Every time he sends people away, they're better off. They've interacted with Jesus. They've had a one-on-one connection with Jesus. They're better off than what they were before because they've had this one-on-one. All the stories that we've shared during this Reimagine series, when they interact with Jesus and he sends them away, they are a better person because of it. And these kids that he interacts with, he sends them off. I wonder what they did. I wonder what their stories were. I wonder what they went off and did with their lives because of this moment interacting with Jesus, because he sends them off better every time. If you're ever reading in the Bible and you're looking at a story and you really like what's there and you like the content and you're trying to figure out what happened, it's always good to look a little bit behind and a little bit ahead and just kind of get an idea of the context of what happened before and what happens next. And so that's what I want to do today, because if you actually open up in that book of Matthew and you're looking at that chapter, you could scroll backwards and you could see interaction with kids over and over again. He heals demon-possessed boys. He heals little girls. He does all these different things with kids, but I want to focus on a couple different ones. So we're kind of going into prequel mode, all right? So we've watched the movie. Jesus has shown us that kids are not a distraction. Now we go into the prequel mode and we go see what happened before that, what lined up before that. And so in there, we're going to just come back just one other page. If you've got those Bibles there, you're just looking at one page back. And what you have is you have Jesus interacting with his disciples. And we looked at this same story and this same interaction from a different gospel last week, but I want to focus on a different part. And so we have a moment where they are walking with Jesus, right? The disciples are walking with Jesus, and they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest, and they ask him who's going to be the greatest. And so that whole interaction is what we looked at last week. Who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to be the greatest? And Jesus brings a kid up, right? He brings a kid in the midst of them. And I gotta read what he says here, because I don't want to paraphrase. I don't want to miss something. This is what Jesus says. He calls the little child and had him stand among them. And he said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And here's some big key. So I wonder if tone changes here. He says, whoever welcomes this little child in my name welcomes me. But if anyone causes one of these little ones, now you got to hear Jesus change his tone, right? He's got a kid in front of him. He's talking to them. He's being pretty polite so far, but he changes his tone. Maybe he grits his teeth a little bit more because he says, if any one of you, you know, parents, you've used this tone before. If any one of you causes one of these little ones who believe in me, you got it in your head, right? You've got this picture. He's holding this kid. He's like, if any one of you believe in me, causes him to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. All right, kid, see you later. Go back to your mama. Go back to mama. Bye-bye. Tell him about me. This is a moment of tone change. You've got Jesus having disciples arguing about being the greatest. He brings a kid up and he says, be like this kid. And then he tells them, don't lead these kids to stumble. He's serious about this. He is serious. And you know what that teaches us? He teaches us that kids are so incredibly valuable. Don't you dare lead a kid astray. Don't you dare just think that they're just somebody else's to worry about. Don't you dare. He says they're so, so important. Don't lead them astray. Don't cause them to stumble. They believe in me, and you need to believe in me the way they believe in me, because that's a key. See, this tone changes, and you think, man, how could we have gone so long as churches and just let kids be babysat and not really worry about them? Why don't we bring them in all the time? This is a big deal. And that's why we want to reimagine church to a point where we move away from that concept of them being a future part of the church to being part of the church now, because they are so very valuable. When I was in that same church that valued me and taught me that Jesus was for me and loved me, there was a man there, his name was John Frey. And he was in his 60s, early 70s, somewhere in there. And John Frey used to lead worship, and he would come up and sing songs. And my family had been established there now for about a year, so we had our seats picked out that we sat in. Like, we had our section, our seats that we always sat in. And so it would be somewhere like right over here. That would probably be about where we were. And so that was our seat. Every week we were there. And so John Frey gets up to sing. At this point, I'm in that 12, 13-year-old phase, you know, just that is a phase. And this man gets up and he sings. And when he gets done singing, he comes down to me, and I have not met him yet before. And he sits down next to me and he says, "What's wrong today?" And I look at him and I look at my parents and I look back at him and I kind of look at my parents and then I twiddle my thumbs a little bit and I'm like, in my back of my head now as an adult, I look back and I'm like, I was 12 or 13. What wasn't wrong with me? I was just, that's right. I was just me. And so I look at him and I said, "I don't know what you mean." And he says, "I can always count on looking down here and seeing you smile. And today you're not smiling. What's wrong?" That became a really big moment in my life, because we had this guy who then became a big friend of the family. He was there with us. He would have meals with us. He would talk with us. He would do things with us. Our Boy Scout troop invited him in to do some merit badge training. And this guy was a big impact in my life, because he came and noticed that I didn't smile. He noticed me. And then in 1997, he came to my parents, real close friends at that point. We knew him. My parents interacted with him all the time. He came to my parents and he said, "I would love to take Charles to New York City. And I would love to show him the Natural History Museum and just walk him around the town and just show him New York City." I came from middle of nowhere, Delaware. The city was terrifying to me. I had never been to any city bigger than like Wilmington, Delaware, Newark, Delaware. And then I moved to Baltimore eventually. So then that was a whole thing, you know? And so this was a crazy adventure for me. And he took me and he walked the streets of New York, showing me where he grew up in the 40s and so. And he showed me, he walked me to this one street and he stood here and he said, "Charles, when I was your age, I stood here. I stood here while the Hindenburg flew over Manhattan before catastrophe struck right after. He stood right here, showed me. Showed me moments. He shared his life with me. He shared life stories with me. He showed me Broadway. We walked Broadway and he showed me where his sister that he loved so much had performed in Broadway plays. And he's like, "This was my life." Actually, I actually have a picture of me and him in New York. This is me, little awkward me. If you flip that picture over in real awkward 13-year-old handwriting, it says, "Mr. Frey, Charles Fisher, New York, 1997. Bright red ink. This is a big, important picture for me. In preparing for today, I tried to find him and find out where he was now, because we've lost touch over the years, but I found out that just this past February, he had passed away. A couple years before that, I had found out he was getting sick, and I was able to contact his family and reach out to them, and I found out I was able to have one last conversation with him a couple years ago, but it was not really lucid at that point. He was sick. And I talked to his daughter through email a couple years ago about how much John Frey impacted me. And I said, "I don't know if he remembers me." And she said, "Are you kidding? He talks about you all the time." She said his kids were gone. His grandkids didn't live close. And he had no little kids to hang out with. And he had Charles. And I'm sitting there, this was a couple years ago, I'm like, wait, what? He impacted my life. He encouraged me. He was the one that told me I was going to do great things for the kingdom. He was somebody who did great things for my life. What do you mean I impacted him? See, that's the thing when you work with kids. It's kind of a back and forth. You impact them and you change their life, but they do the same for you. And you might not realize it at the moment. You might realize it down the road. And usually the kid realizes you were influential way too late, but you realize it for your own life. If you keep scrolling back in this moments of Matthew, we find another verse, find another story. And this is one that in the Gospels, so the first four books of the New Testament are called the Gospels. They account for Jesus's life and ministry, and they tell it from different points of view. And so all of them tell some of the same stories. Some of them have different stories. It just depends on what they share. All four Gospels accounts for this story called the Feeding of the 5,000. So Jesus is speaking to a crowd of 5,000 plus people. And in Matthew, it accounts for this. But I want to point out the fact that we're talking about kids here. If you read through this Matthew account, he doesn't talk about kids at all. But if you flip over to John's account, when John talks about this, he says there's a little boy involved. And so I want to tell you this story. I want us to keep Matthew in mind and looking through the story. But I want to talk about this boy that gets involved. So Jesus brings up this point. He's teaching to 5,000 people. He's bringing the message. He's talking to them. They're engaged. They're listening. And then he turns to his disciples. He's like, all right, guys, feed them. And they're like, wait, what? This is expensive, Jesus. This is not something we can just pull together. There was no mission barbecue planned for after service. You didn't tell us that this was the deal. There's no Jimmy John's right down there. There's nothing. There's nothing planned. Jesus, remember we gave up our jobs? So we don't have money, you know, the money's not here. Jesus, we can't just pop up food, you know. We gave up everything to follow you. We're not even fishermen anymore. I don't have fish to bring to you. I've got nothing. Jesus, what are you doing to us? And then this little boy gets brought before Jesus. And this little boy has a lunch of some fish and some bread. And Jesus is like, perfect. So he starts breaking up the bread and breaking up the fish and handing it out to people. And they're just handing it out and handing it out and handing it out. And everybody's full and everybody's eating enough and everybody's completely satisfied. And Jesus says to the disciples, all right, clean up the leftovers. And the disciples are like, are you serious? Now I got to clean up leftovers? Jesus, I don't have freezer space because it's not been invented yet. And you don't even know what you're asking. I'm going to have to eat tinfoil fish and bread for like months. You don't know what you're asking of me to collect the leftovers. So we have this story of the feeding, right? Coming from a little boy's lunch. Let me pause there and tell you something. It's awesome that this boy offers his lunch, and it's amazing because Jesus brings him into this powerful moment. But this was all set up by parents. Because that boy didn't pack his own lunch. That boy did not leave the house thinking, yeah, I'm going to bring some fish and bread, and this is going to be a great day. Let me show you. This is my lunchbox from when I was a kid. See, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? That's legit, right there. You can't have it. It's not going on eBay. It's mine. All right, look. If you open it up, it even has a note from my mama still in there. It says, happy 7th birthday, Charles. See that? Mama's pack your lunch, right? Mama's take care of you, right? So you know this boy had lunch because his mama packed him a lunch. This boy did not pack his own lunch. If he packed his own lunch, it'd look like my lunch in here. I got some Swedish fish, I got some shortbread cookies, and that's my lunch, right? You know, if some little boy is packing his lunch, he's like, Swedish fish and shortbread cookies, and then he runs out the door. Mama's like, hey, do you have lunch? He's like, yeah, I got lunch. And they're like, let me see that. And they pack him a real lunch. You got bread, you got fish. No fruit snacks are in there because mama's packed you a healthy lunch. So mama's got his lunch packed. Don't miss this because this is a moment, right, where Jesus brings a kid in to ministry, to serve. But it was set up by his parents. It was set up way before he even got there. Talking to you parents in the room, you guys can set up your kids to serve and do great things. You guys can set up your kids in great opportunities to be able to serve and just do awesome things for the kingdom, because here's what we learned from this story. Kids have so much to offer. They have so much to offer because you've set them up that way. You've honed their gifts. You've set them up. You've nurtured them. You've taught them. You've made them who they are. They have so much to offer because of who you are. And so he has a lunch to bring because mama made sure he had a lunch to bring. And he's able to use it because he partners up with Jesus. And Jesus makes it amazing. Because now it's not just some fish and bread. It's a full meal with leftovers. Enough to feed anybody. I think the other disciples don't account for this kid in their story because they want to take credit for it. After it all happened, they're like, yeah, I'm the one that found that meal. I found that kid. Yeah, they're like, Jesus, I've got bread and fish. And they're like, where'd you get that bread and fish? Well, I surely didn't get it from the kid with the black eye. Just saying. I did not get it from him. I just have this bread and fish. That was a joke, you guys. I'm trying to test you out, and you kind of missed that one, but that's all right. That's all right. I'll let that one go. I'll let it go. I was trying to feel you out for a joke there. I don't think the disciple really beat up a kid, all right? I'm just joking around, just trying to feel you out. It's kind of a softball joke there. You missed it, but keep it on your toes. You've got it. You've got it. We have other ones. We have other ones. All right. All right. So look what a kid's lunch can do. You know, look what a kid's lunch can do. If we're so worried about just making sure kids are taken care of in some other room and not actually making sure that they're learning about Jesus and they're not coming alongside serving with us, if we're not getting on their level and talking to them, we're going to miss a chance to use a kid's talents. We're going to miss a chance to see some kids get up here and lead some awesome singing, because look what kids can do. Am I right? How impactful would it be for you guys next week when you come here, because you're going to try five. You're going to try us five times, and you're going to come again next week, and you're going to sit down, and you're not going to see those kids up here leading worship, but you're going to walk out there, and you're going to tell some little kid, you're going to be like, I missed you singing this week. And that kid's life is going to change because you noticed them. You noticed them when they served today, and next week you noticed them when you didn't see them up here, but you still saw them out there because they are part of this together. You're going to change their life just from saying, hey, I missed you up there. Or even going out there today and saying, good job up there. Man, you worked hard. Man, you did so good. Because look what a lunch can do. There's opportunities for kids to serve. There's opportunities everywhere for kids to serve. I've told you, I'm the coffee guy. I like to brew coffee. We do a coffee events. There's been times where I've just had to bring my son. He's 3 years old. I've had to bring him to events just because I'm brewing coffee. And I've got some moments where I'm brewing coffee because I do pour over coffee at events. And I have my son at my left side right there. My left side? My side right there. And he's brewing coffee. Not really, but he's brewing coffee. He's in it. If you come here on a Sunday morning, you see kids setting up. You'll see kids putting down stuff in nursery. You'll see kids hanging pipe and drape. You'll see kids running wires. You'll see kids helping with lights. You'll see kids cleaning up trash, because kids are part of this together. They make this happen just as much as all the other volunteers here, because kids are part of this together. Because we're a church that wants to see the next gen win. When I was about 14, I was asked to work lights for a play. It wasn't these like cool LED lights. It was like the big one. It was like this big, puts off 2 million lumens of heat, and you like have to this way, big old levers to change the colors. And I'm like 14, and I was asked to run this light for a Christmas play, and I'm like, I've never done it. My dad grabbed me by the neck and said, he can do it, you know? So I did it. Dad said I had to. So I did it. And I remember being in that play and doing the lights. A little bit later, I was too old for VBS, a vacation Bible school. That fun daycare stuff I told you about, I was too old for it now. But they asked me to come back and serve. They asked me to come help other little kids do crafts. I got a picture somewhere in there. Look at this. Cowboy Charles, man, right there. Helping with VBS. This was a different time back then. Look at this. This is when I was a kid. This is a staff member for the VBS. He's got a holster on his side. This is a different time frame. You're dressing up like cowboys for a whole VBS, and you can have a holster. Nah, it's just different time. So we have this moment of being asked to volunteer, being brought in and serving, because people said, hey, this kid's got something to offer. And not just me, but kids have something to offer. They have so much to offer. We overlook the lunch too much. And Jesus shows us that we have to move away from a mindset that kids are some distant future, and then we have to see them as the church now. I have one last picture I want to show you, and this is of me and my dad and my son. So Lucian, my son, is named Lucian Everett. My dad is Elmer Everett, and so we're standing in front of the Everett Theater. And so this is three generations of fishermen. And I have to tell you about my dad, because this all started with my parents deciding that we were going to be a church-going family. My dad didn't come from that background. Actually, while I was an adult, I went to a funeral for my dad's side of the family where they had hired a priest to do the funeral, but they literally heckled him the whole time, because they have no belief in Jesus and the Bible. They have nobody that's passed that on to them as what it is valuable. They don't have people that have come alongside them and said, hey, Jesus is for you and loves you. They just don't have it. But my dad decided, our family, would be a church-going family. We would be a family raised that Jesus loves us. And so that became my dad then getting involved in the church. And he was, like I told you, he was the landscaper for the church. He did the mowing of the grass. He did the gardens. My dad never considered himself a smart man, but he told me everything about being a man of God. And now, my wife and I lead evening prayers with my son because her parents did the same thing for her. They set her up in a system where they were involved in church. They were involved in groups. They were involved in things. And so they passed it on to the next generation. And because of those passings on, because they valued us, because they set us up, we now have the chance to do the same thing with our son. We have the chance to have prayer time with him. We have the chance to tell him that Jesus loves him. We have the chance that when he's not listening, we say, even when you're not listening, we love you and Jesus loves you. We have the chance that even in the midst of potty training and he has an accident, we have the chance to say, I even love you when you've had that accident. We have that chance because we value him, because the generation before us valued us. And so to be a church that sees the next gen win, we're all in this together, partnering with parents, partnering with each other, looking at the kids and saying, hey, I see you. There's a powerful image there of just saying, I see you. You're valuable and you have so much to offer. And the thing is, when that interaction happens and we get to show them that interaction with Jesus, they will not, they cannot go away unchanged. And you won't either. When you interact with them, you're going to be changed as well. Would you pray with me?